I'll start by just saying a few words about Plato. Many of you have heard me say many, many times, in fact, I've been saying it for about 30 years, that without Freud, you do not have A Course in Miracles. You could make the same statement about Plato. The Course falls very much within the Platonic or Neoplatonic tradition that's kind of infused Western intellectual thought for 2,500 years now. And it isn't an accident to actually lump Freud and Plato together. They really complement each other very, very well. And actually, Freud, who did not like philosophers or philosophy at all, revered Plato. And there's one passage where he refers to as the divine Plato. One way of kind of, and very succinctly and to greatly oversimplify 2,500 years, one can make some statements about Plato, Freud, and the Course that in which you could really see a continuum. One of the problems which was a major focus of Plato's work throughout his entire life was the difference between appearance and reality. And for Plato, the appearances, which would be anything in the material world, was a veil, and that it concealed the reality. And the reality for Plato was good. Freud, centuries later, basically was concerned with the same issue of appearances and reality. But for him, the reality beyond the appearances, one place he referred to as the facade, the facades of our life, the reality was awful. Right? And the purpose of the facades was to conceal how awful it is. What we find in the Course is a perfect blending of both the Platonic and the Freudian view, because what Jesus teaches us in the Course is that everything here is a facade, everything here is a veil, that the world of appearances has as its purpose to conceal the underlying reality, or quote, reality, which is terrible, which is the ego thought system, but that thought system conceals the true reality, or what one could say, the reflection of the true reality, which would be the Holy Spirit's thought system. And in that way, you could see how the Course really brings together and unites both the philosophical work of Plato and the psychological work of Freud. Just one other thing about Plato, almost all of his work comes in the form of what he called dialogues. He did not write philosophical expositions of his ideas or his theories. Everything came in the form of a dialogue. In the early and middle period of his life, the central figure was Socrates. As a character, and then he became basically the mouthpiece of Plato. And the ideas came about through Socrates having discussions with various people, and just as Socrates did in his actual life. So when we speak of Plato's work, we're really talking about the dialogues. The one from which I will read to you, this passage comes as the Phaedrus, Phaedrus. One of his greatest dialogues, along with the Symposium, which is a very, very famous one as well, is where we find Plato's idea of love. And that's where the whole notion of Platonic love comes from. Most of you have heard that term. It's kind of an idealized love, you know, untainted by romantic or sexual feelings or thoughts. This is kind of an idealized form of love, and it comes from Plato's discussion in these two dialogues. The title of many of the dialogues comes from one of the characters in the dialogue, so in this case, Phaedrus. All right, let me read to you now where this passage comes from. Again, it's from Phaedrus, and Plato was actually talking about what his goal is for what man should aspire to and ultimately reach. And he says, man must pass from a plurality of perceptions to a unity gathered together by reasoning. And such understanding is a recollection of those things which our souls beheld aforetime as they journeyed with their God, looking down upon the things which now we suppose to be, and gazing up to that which truly is. Right here you see the juxtaposition of appearance and reality, that when we are above the battleground, which is the Course's term for what Plato was talking about, right, that we look down, we journey with God, and we look down upon the things which now we suppose to be, the things we think exist, and we gaze up to what truly is. Right, that we go from appearances to reality. One of the key ideas that permeates Plato's thought, as it does the Course, is that what really occurs is that we remember what we already know, but have forgotten. So there's that wonderful juxtaposition in the Course where Jesus, in effect, says that the Holy Spirit teaches us to remember what we forgot and to forget what we remembered. Namely, we remembered the ego's thought system of separation, and we made that to be reality, and we're asked to forget that, and instead to remember the love of God that we chose at the beginning to forget. And that's very, very Platonic. Right? For Plato, who was extremely interested in education, education was helping students to remember. It was not putting information in a sense, or he would not have said it this way, but Jesus says it this way in the Course, we get the interferences out. And we get the interferences away. What remains is the knowledge that was always there, and which the Holy Spirit is the reflection of in our right minds. So that's what Plato's talking about. Wherefore, if a man makes right use of such means of remembrance, you know, if he remembers the reality and goes past the appearances, right? Again, if he goes past the shadows on the interior wall of the cave and goes to the source, which is the light, right? Wherefore, if a man makes right use of such means of remembrance and ever approaches to the full vision of the perfect mysteries, he and he alone becomes truly perfect. Right? And that, of course, is the goal. Right? The Course's analogy to that would be an advanced teacher of God that Jesus talks about in the teacher's manual. Right? And the ultimate of that, of course, is when you accept the atonement for yourself and you become part of the real world. Right? Which would really be, for in Platonic terms, being in touch with these ideas, these perfect ideas of truth and justice, virtue, etc. Standing aside from the busy doings of mankind and drawing nigh to the divine, he is rebuked by the multitude as being out of his wits, for they know not that he is possessed by a deity. So when you live according to the laws of reason, of the Holy Spirit's right-minded vision of things, the world would think you're insane. Right? All right. And then in extreme forms, again, is what befell Socrates, the world would destroy you. Right. I remember some Christian writer that I'd read many, many years ago said that one should live one's life so that according to the world, you'd be judged as insane. All right. Right. It's the same idea. And that goes back to 2,500 years. Actually, it's extraordinary when you think how relevant Plato is. Again, he wrote 2,500 years ago. That's a very long time when you think of, you know, span of years and influence. And he's still read today, and he's still as relevant, I think, as he was then. He actually had the added advantage, just as Freud did, of writing very, very well. So when you read Plato, you're not usually reading heavy philosophical treatises. He wrote very, very well, and that, I think, also makes him a little easier to read. So, but at any rate, the idea is that you not live according to the laws of the world, because the world is insane, right? As Jesus reminds us over and over and over again in this Course. Right? What is sanity in this world is special relationships. Right, where you see people as different, you see people as having something that you lack, and your only purpose is to learn how to manipulate, use, seduce, control others so you get what you want from them. And to the world, that's sanity. That's how the world lives. You know, it's based on the fundamental principle of the ego thought system, and therefore the fundamental principle of this world, of one or the other. It's either me or you, and therefore the choice is obvious. Right? That's how governments function. That's how religious groups function. That's how social groups function. That's how individuals function. That's how families function. That's how everyone, collectively or individually, function. Everyone functions that way. Right? And that's frankly insane, because the truth is the sonship of God is one. Right? And that's what happens when you pass from the plurality of perceptions. You get to the unity. That's what vision is. What Plato talks about, a unity gathered together by reasoning. Right? And that's Jesus' goal for us in this course, that we go past what seems to be the many to the one. Right? And as I mentioned at the beginning, what this course does, and when you see it in the larger historical or intellectual context, you could really appreciate the gift to us, is that he takes Plato's vision, he takes Freud's vision, and then he blends them both and does full justice to both thought systems. Right? That before you get to the true unity of God's Son, you must first get to the true unity of the ego. Because it's that single-minded purpose of the ego that permeates every aspect, without exception, of our life here. The way we live as individuals, the way we grew up, the way we look at our bodies, the way we treat our bodies, the way we treat other people's bodies, the way, again, groups treat each other, whether you're talking about rather small groups or you're talking about nation states, it's always the same. It always comes back to the same basic issue. Right. That's why over and over again Jesus tells us his course is very simple, because he says the same thing over and over again about how the world is saying the same thing over and over again. And so we're asked to see that everything that happens in our world, certainly everything that happens in our personal world, right, is all about the same problem. Lessons 79 and 80 in the workbook are very clear. There's one problem and one solution. Right. The world tells us there are many, many problems, multitudinous problems. But in truth, there's only one problem and there's only one solution. And it's only by first recognizing that there's one problem that we then get to the one solution that undoes the one problem. And when the problem is undone, then we get in touch with Plato's vision. Right. Because the vision of the good, the idea of the good, is our oneness, is the reality beyond everything here. You know, he would not have gone as far as the course does, right, in terms of looking at the oneness of God's Son. But his teaching certainly leads in that direction. Plotinus, actually, was a great third century philosopher, really took Plato's work and gave it a much more mystical a goal. Because he did talk about the one. For Plotinus, who was not a Christian, God was the one, capital O. Right? And we, as an extension of God, are also part of that oneness. And of course, all this is fleshed out very, very clearly in the Course. And what's important for us is not so much to have that experience of the oneness of creation or the oneness of spirit, but to begin to experience and to allow ourselves to begin to experience the reflection of that oneness here. Which means we still live in a life of separate bodies. We still live in a life of personalities. We don't deny our personal self. But we recognize that we are all one because we share the same purpose. And we share the same purpose because we share the same ego thought system. And therefore, the purpose that we share is undoing that ego thought system. That's the purpose. That's the goal. When Jesus talks about that, the purpose of that what establishes someone as a teacher of God is that he does not see someone's interests as separate from his own. That's a way of saying we all have the same interest, the same need, which is to awaken from the same dream. Right? The dreams come in so many different packages and seem so very different, but at their core, they are the same. So we're told in the Course, and Jesus repeated this in the Gifts of God when he dictated that to Helen, that the core of every dream is fear. Every dream is one. It's all based on fear. And from fear, of course, we have guilt and we have sin, and we have the belief in being separate. And since we have the belief we're separate from God, we therefore have the belief we're separate from each other, not to mention separate from ourselves. So what we're asked to do in the Course is to pass from appearances to reality. The plurality of the perceptual world, in which there are so many things, lessons 183 and 184 particularly, is all about the little names we give to everything in this world as a substitute for the name of God,